Now, this is pretty clear-cut. The correct answer is D. And you might reference the NASW Code of Ethics, Section 1.07R. A, B, and C are incorrect because they assume that exceptions can be made to confidentiality protections after the person dies. Module 7 involves the patient's or client's right to know, and it raises the ethical issue regarding confidentiality as to how much information should be shared with family members and also regarding patient or client self-determination. The basis of this module is a case study by Dr. Saladay, who writes regarding ethical problems. How much information does a patient have the right to know about his own condition? Now, we're talking about confidentiality related to telling the individual rather than to telling other people. So we're ending the course on a little twist regarding the normal issues of confidentiality. See what you think should be done here. 86-year-old Alvin was hospitalized for a biopsy and skin lump removal. After Alvin awoke from surgery, his physician told him that the tumor had been completely removed and didn't look malignant. Alvin made a great recovery. Later, it was learned that the tumor was malignant but slow growing. However, Alvin's prognosis is still excellent. So, what's the problem? Alvin's son and daughter believe that if he finds out about the pathology report, he'll go into a tailspin and decline, because he thinks cancer is a death sentence. Normally, staff believe in full disclosure to patients. But what about the circumstances? What about the point of telling Alvin about the biopsy results? Ethical behavior involves what's fair and right. In this situation, you think that the right thing would be perhaps to protect Alvin by withholding information about the biopsy results. After all, isn't his peace of mind the most important thing? Now, that's one way to look at it, according to Saladay. Before deciding, let's consider the main reason Alvin's children don't want to inform him about his biopsy results. Now, the children believe the news will be too upsetting to him. But why do they think he can't handle the information, especially when the facts are overwhelmingly positive? Now, some questions. Does Alvin have a history of significant depression? Is he being treated for depression now? Is he still grieving over the loss of a loved one to cancer? And another thought, has he ever been suicidal? Consider some of the consequences, then, of withholding information about his prognosis. I think the very good point to be made here is, how can he participate in treatment decisions if he's ignorant of his condition? If the staff suspects that Alvin will decline and go into a tailspin, to use their words, the staff need to address the key mental health issues before tackling this one. If not, as advocates for the patient, the social services staff can work with the physician and family to reconsider. The key point here is Alvin's right to know. Educate Alvin's children about his condition. Emphasize the importance of telling the truth to ensure that he gets appropriate follow-up treatment and to foster trust between Alvin and his caregivers. In short, given the uncertainty that characterizes large areas of healthcare policies, Alvin also needs education about his condition so he can continue his recovery with the understanding that cancer isn't an automatic death sentence. Now, let's look at question 12 related to the case of Alvin. And for this particular question, there's no correct answer here, so merely circle those that apply. Circle the questions that you have, and you can circle more than one answer here. First of all, something that was left out of the case study is, and I'm wondering whether you're wondering about this as well, why were Alvin's son and daughter told first? Never mentioned about the fact that they were the legal guardians. Which brings me to question B. Were his son and daughter legal guardians? C. Was a release of information signed by Alvin? And this brings up a very major confidentiality issue, which seems to be ignored in the case study. And D, does this fall under the area of protection regarding harm to self? Remember, the purpose of this course is to stimulate your thinking about ethics and confidentiality. As is brought out in this home study course, practices long believed invulnerable to change are now being questioned. As we've looked at the areas of confidentiality with, for example, the advent of computers when we talked about e-care, it raises questions and doubts about whether confidentiality, because of the sharing of information, is becoming more of an outdated concept. Confidentiality has become a highly complex ethical and legal issue, needless to say. Those professionals, unaware of its complexities, generally function with a few simple guidelines, such as don't talk about clients outside of work, and when a subpoena arrives, you have to answer it. Unfortunately, therapists often find the standard guidelines are inadequate. There may be no single definitive answer to tell the confused therapist what should be done. Various sources can be consulted for guidance. Ethics invites us to explore the gray, fuzzy edges. But in the end, as we've discovered in this home study course, most often, individuals must often exercise professional discretion. In short, given the uncertainty that characterizes large areas of health profession, confidentiality, policies, and ethics, therapists by necessity, in related to privacy and confidentiality ethical matters, must be risk takers, innovators, and probability seekers. Let's look back over the home study course in summary. In Module 1, a devil's advocate position towards ethics was taken in Who Needs Ethics Anyway? Prejudice was examined in light of emotions versus what is right. In Module 2, you received a review of the Tarasoff decision and the duty to warn. Here you're in the precarious position of assessing the severity of the threat and the likelihood of it being carried through versus breaking confidentiality with your client. In Module 3, regarding child abuse, this poses an ever-increasing confidentiality challenge as parents, physicians, teachers, and community agencies become involved in your treatment. Module 4, Physician Confidentiality, gave insights into confidentiality issues of a patient who felt should have been told that her husband-to-be was a homosexual, and a second case of possible child abuse and violating confidentiality. Module 5 looked at the ethical arguments regarding a burn victim's desire to die. Module 6, e-care technology, touched upon the tip of the iceberg regarding the increased use of computers and the resulting increased challenge it presents to you to maintain confidentiality. And finally, Module 7 asks you to think about the confidentiality question regarding a client's right to know about his or her own condition and self-determination. Remember, the purpose of this course is to stimulate your thinking about ethics and confidentiality. This home study course is one in our ethics series. We thank you for selecting us to fulfill this continuing education requirement and hope you will consider our other ethics courses in this series as future CEs are required. We also offer audio home study courses, usually 10 hours in length, in other areas as well. I look forward to talking to you again in your next home study course sponsored by the Healthcare Training Institute.